My guest at this time is former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf. During his years in the House of Representatives, he was known as a champion for human rights. Since retiring from Congress, he's now affiliated with the 21st Century Wilberforce Initiative, and he's been especially concerned about the plight of Christians and other religious minorities affected by the brutality of ISIS and the ongoing warfare between ISIS and the Syrian government. And Congressman, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure. Glad to be with you. Thank you.
Well, there's so many headlines in the news right now related to what's going on there. Starting this week with the UN, we've got two very different strategies. The president that seems to have more of a hands-off approach. Russian President Vladimir Putin says he's going all in essentially on the side to prop up the Assad regime because you either have to side with Assad or you have to side with ISIS. Talk a little bit about that dilemma and which path you think is the right one here.
Well, there is a dilemma. I want to make it clear, though, that the first thing we have to do to focus the attention in the region is to declare what is taking place to Christians, Yazidis, Shia, and other religious minorities is genocide. It meets the Raphael Lemkin definition of genocide, and for the world not to be calling it genocide is unbelievable. For President Obama not to be calling it genocide. For Samantha Power, who wrote the classic book on genocide, she wrote the book Problems from Hell, it is genocide. We had a young Yazidi woman in here yesterday who had been assaulted by an ISIS person in the region, and he was an American. He was an American from America, and we're now seeing the end, the extinction of Christianity. So I think the church in the West has to speak out. We missed genocide in Cambodia. We missed it and we felt terrible about it. The world missed genocide in Rwanda. If you recall, President Clinton flew to Rwanda in his last year, a year and a half, and apologized to the Rwandans. And he said, if I had acted sooner, lives could have been saved. We missed it in Srebrenica. And all the other people who have done genocide have tried to hide it. ISIS is not hiding it. They are showing what is going on. We see the beheading of 21 Christians in Libya a couple months ago. The administration said 21 Egyptians. They didn't say 21 Coptic Christians. We see the 148 Christians killed in Garissa in Kenya. The administration said 148 Kenyans, not 148 Christians. The Pope has called it genocide. Cardinal Dolan has called it genocide. And we need to, the administration and the Congress and the UN needs to call what is taking place in that area genocide. And by doing that, we will honor the victims, but we will begin to put in place a policy that deals with what's taking place out there. We were out in the region in January. We spent 5 days through the region. And almost to a person, every person we met with, particularly the Christian community, felt abandoned by the West. The Yazidi community felt abandoned by the West. And I had a couple of people say, doesn't the church in the West care about it? So I think the number one things we have to do is to call what's taking place there genocide. Then there are things you can do. You can have a no-fly zone. And there's so many things that can be done. We were with a group yesterday that said oil is pouring out of the ISIS-controlled area into Turkey. You should put an embargo. There's so much that could be done. But I think one clarifying thing is to call what is taking place genocide. You know, there is this sign at Dachau concentration camp. It says, never again.
Right.
It's in five different languages. It's in French, English, Russian, Hebrew, and I think the other language may be Italian, and it says never again, and yet it is taking place again, and the world is silent. So I think that's what we have to do, and the administration, quite frankly, they've been silent. They really do not have a policy.
Why do you think they're reluctant to use the word genocide?
I don't know why they would be reluctant. I think, you know, the president's going to feel very bad about this when he leaves, if he does not. He stood at the Holocaust Museum a couple years ago and talked about genocide and how the world must never forget. I don't know why. Why will he not use it? Why will the Congress not use it? When Sam Brownback and I went to Darfur in Ethiopia. We came back. We put in a resolution. Congress got behind it. Colin Powell called it genocide in Darfur. President Bush called it. This administration is doing almost nothing, and the people there feel fundamentally abandoned. And the people that care about the faith community, you know, more biblical activity took place in Iraq than any other country of the world other than Israel. Abraham's from Iraq. Ezekiel is buried in Iraq. Daniel's buried in Iraq. When we were there in January, we went to Nahum's tomb. He's buried in Iraq. Rebecca's from Iraq. I mean, Jonah, ISIS about 6 months ago, Jonah's tomb. And the West is silent. In 2003, there were 1.5 million Christians. They're now down to roughly 300,000. And 17 Christian families leave Iraq every single day. And the Christians in Iraq feel abandoned by the church in the West.
We're talking with former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf. Frank, so many different follow-up questions come to mind based on what you just said. Let's talk a little bit more. If, in fact, we can get folks to declare that what's going on there is, in fact, genocide, you mentioned a couple different ideas about what could happen there, including oil embargo and so forth. What other concrete steps following the declaration of genocide do you think would be most effective?
When we went out with the Peshmerga, the Kurdistan military people, their weapons are old. They told us they have a very difficult time getting any weapons, any aid, any training from the United States. We should be aiding the Peshmerga. The Peshmerga is the point of the spear. Also, there are what they call the Nineveh Plains Protection Unit, made up of Christians and Yazidis, it's basically a National Guard. They want to be able to protect their own villages. We should be aiding them. Senator Levin, who since left the Congress, had an amendment which enabled us to aid them. Thirdly, we're going to have to put in special ops down on the ground, begin to call in air strikes against these people, and beginning to do some movements. The Saudis should be involved. Qatar should be involved. The Turks should be involved. When we were in there, they said many people in Qatar were aiding ISIS. They said some Saudi sheiks were at that time were aiding ISIS. I don't know if they still are, but they were. The Turks were allowing people to fly to Istanbul to reposition to go south in the Syria. So the Arab nations in the region should participate with us. The king of Jordan has called this World War III. We are basically either in or entering World War III. And for the United States to not be doing very, very much, I'll tell you, we should be aiding the Peshmerga, and we're really not. Any aid that goes to the Peshmerga goes first to Baghdad. And, of course, you have that Shia divide and everything else, and very little bit of it gets up to the Peshmerga. So we should put special operations forces to aid and train the Peshmerga. We should be giving them weapons. We should be giving aid and training to the Nineveh Plains unit. We should be urging the Saudis, the Turks, working with the Jordanians and others to put together almost an Arab NATO, if you will. But we also need some other – the very fact that 180 Americans have gone to fight these guys, it's crazy. And this young woman who was assaulted by this ISIS person, she said that he said he had a wife and two kids back in the United States, and he had left that area twice to go back and visit them. We need to stop what's taking place. So there is so much that could be done. But I think one of the starting points is to call it genocide so we can mobilize the world to fight what's taking place in the region. Otherwise, during our lifetime, we're going to see the extinction of Christianity in the cradle of Christianity.
A couple minutes left in our conversation with Frank Wolf. And, sir, the last time you and I spoke, I believe, was back in February. You had just been to Iraq, as you mentioned a little bit earlier in our conversation. Wilberforce put out a pretty extensive report following that. What's been the reality on the ground for Christians, Yazidis, and other religious minorities since that time? Is it the same horror? Has it intensified? What are they facing right now?
It's intensified. It's much, much worse. Bishop Werda, who was the bishop from the Erbil area, now he's calling it genocide. Every time you talk to anyone, he was over here about 3 or 4 weeks ago. But, you know, strangely enough, there were some Catholic nuns that wanted to come into the country, and the administration denied their visa. we were with a sister, Sister Diana, a couple of months ago. We wanted to bring her here so she could talk. The administration initially denied her visa. There are some Catholic nuns who want to come over here for different reasons. The administration has denied their visa. So the situation for the Christians and for the Yazidis, and even for some Shia, is much, much worse. We are going to see the end of Christianity. You know, there's a saying out in the Middle East. First the Sephardi people, and then the Sunni people. The Jewish community for the Sephardi people. The Jewish population of Iraq in 1950 was 150,000. While we were there in January, we asked, how many are left? They said there are four Jewish individuals left in the country. The same thing is going to happen to the Christian community. During my lifetime, we will see no Christians in the land of Rebecca, of Jonah, of Esther, of Ezekiel, of Daniel. There will be no Christians left unless this country and the West. And the West is beginning to pay a price. Look at the refugee crisis coming into Europe. They can't handle it. Unless you deal with ISIS, what you're seeing in Europe is going to magnify, get it more intense and more intense, and millions more will come. So you got to deal with ISIS now.
To what extent are Christians and Yazidis and other religious minorities part of that refugee surge? What we hear about mostly is Muslims. Are Christians and Yazidis part of that flood, or is this a separate thing and it's just difficult for those being persecuted the worst to get out?
They are part of it, but they are not going into the refugee camps, mainly because the Christians and Yazidis are fearful even when they're in the UN camps. I won't go into detail what they said because I don't want to, but they're very, very fearful. So you're finding Christians and Yazidis generally going into individual homes. Many of the Christians are not going north. Many are coming into Lebanon. And the Yazidis are probably the worst off of anyone. I mean, almost no one cares about the Yazidis. There have been almost 3,000 Yazidi girls who have been taken by ISIS and have been enslaved.
Last question for you, Congressman. What should be then the policy of our country towards the refugees?
We should be destroying ISIS. We should be protecting that region with a no-fly zone. We should be organizing the Arab nations to get on the ground, and we should be putting special op forces in, and we should be doing what we can to stabilize the region. Short of that, the West will not even be able to handle these refugees. And there's real danger, I must say it. Some of the refugees that are going to come in are going to be ISIS people. I mean, there have even been reports that some of the people going into Europe are actually connected to ISIS. There are so many coming in, and now it isn't just Syrians. You're getting people from Eritrea, from Afghanistan. Did you see what took place to that Wakundum town in Afghanistan yesterday? The whole town was taken over by the Taliban. So unless ISIS is stopped, this thing is going to get so bad that Europe will not be able to withstand all the refugees coming.
Congressman, it's a dire report, but a vital one for folks to know about. Thank you very much for your time and your insight, sir.
Thank you, Greg.
Former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf served 34 years in the House of Representatives, during which time he earned the reputation well-earned as one of the leading human rights champions anywhere on this planet. He is now a distinguished senior fellow of the 21st Century Wilberforce Initiative. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.